Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Yeah, fun fact, I have a thing about Westerns. What? Come at me.
I didn't know that.
I reveal things slowly on this show, so come at me. But yeah, so like Unforgiven, The Man with No Name trilogy, all that stuff, Spaghetti Westerns. Wild... Shut up. You almost got me with that. The Magnificent Seven.
Almost. You were saying it.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 10 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and with me today in the studio, we have Mr. Connor Casey back.
What's going on, guys?
Matthew Aguilar's here as always, or almost always.
What up, peoples?
And back on our remote channel, our comicbook.com whore slash Star Wars maestro and the guy who keeps us from misspelling everything that we do, Mr. Patrick Cavanaugh is back.
What up, world?
And you can hear us and see us now, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, I wouldn't say that's like a good thing, but I can see you.
Yes. Wow.
We got to look at your face in the box for the next time. Really, like, You're doing all right. But Patrick's here because we have some good, fun stuff to talk about today. As you saw from this episode title, we're going to be talking about the new Candyman trailer. We're also going to be doing a review of the horror movie remake of The Invisible Man. So, of course, we need our horror expert here for both of those things. But that is not the only thing we're going to be doing. We're going to talk about an interesting little Marvel what if that could have happened that I think we're going to promote mostly because I just want to see this happen. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about some shakeups in the Indiana Jones franchise. And we're going to give you also a little bit of anime in the form of a review of My Hero Academia Heroes Rising, if time permits. If not, we'll just do that next show. Because we have some wrestling to talk about today. We thought Connor wouldn't be available for us because he was going to be out there doing what he does, covering a live event. But now it's kind of wrapped up in spectacular fashion.
if it looks like I'm disheveled, it's because I just came from covering the show and it didn't end well.
What show are we going to be talking about today?
Super Showdown.
All right, so WWE Super Showdown, and we're going to be closing out with that segment. So all you wrestling fans, be sure to hang in. But let's start up at the top of things today in our news segment. Let's talk about that Candyman reboot or a remake. It's not a remake. It's Candyman reboot or
don't
sequel.
Don't say his name. You're already two down.
Yeah, I'm already
the
two down right there.
The re-sequel.
Yeah, the re-sequel of Candyman. And so we got the first trailer today, which featured Yahya Abdul-Mateen. It was a very kind of good, stylish. People have been calling this Jordan Peele's Candyman. He's not... Which just sucks because it's a female director who's just getting overshadowed by Jordan Peele right now. But it's not Jordan Peele. But the reason why I could feel that way is this looks very much in the line of like Jordan Peele's horror productions. It feels very much like a Get Out slash. And what's that new horror movie that's coming out? Antebellum. It feels like almost it could be like in the same universe as Antebellum. So it really did kind of take this new approach. And I think Charlie Ridgely even compared it to like a Shining vibe to The Candyman, which was, you know, a cult classic 90s horror film starring Tony Todd, the now icon Tony Todd. But this one is very much kind of about, like, the legacy of The Candyman and what it means. There's already fans have put together that Yahya's character could have some important ties to the first movie, and this could really be a direct sequel in many ways to that film. The concept and how, of course, it's always about the concept, the whole Bloody Mary slash Candyman concept and how it's executed. And there's one sequence in the trailer that shows a bunch of girls in the high school bathroom and kind of shows how that can play out very in a very scary fashion without necessarily being so gruesome. Like one girl's in the stall, while all these other mean girls are kind of like playing a game and get slaughtered while she's just listening to this happen.
Yeah.
And so we saw things like that and some other interesting concepts of how in this one has much better effects to show like the Candyman being very real, but also like not real at the same time, of people getting dragged around and killed by what looks like invisible forces, but is really this supernatural killer. And it looked like other themes about kind of urban life, gentrification, all this stuff are going to be kind of wrapped up in this story. And the first one was very much heavy on those metaphors. It was set in the projects, with this white lady who comes into the projects to investigate. And I don't know how to describe it. I'm kind of at a loss for good words that mean good stuff right now. But kind of the cultural clash of that and doing that. And kind of forcing this person from outside urban America to take a look inside urban America in the history of slavery and all this stuff. So it looks like the new Candyman is going to kind of carry on the tradition, but look a lot prettier in the process. So I was impressed with this trailer. Patrick, how about you? Put some horror expertise on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, the original Candyman and obviously this one based on a Clive Barker story. And Clive Barker is bananas, you know, like Hellraiser is obviously one of his more well-known mythologies that he created. So when you watch the original Candyman, sure, it's about, you know, saying his name five times into a mirror and him with his hook hand coming out of the mirror. But there's just so many other supernatural, cultural, political, racial, gender issues all going on at play. So that's why I think having Nia DaCosta, and it was, you know, co-written by Jordan Peele, so he is a little bit more involved than just producing it or something like that. So I think, you know, from this first look, it's definitely a good mix, and it will honor the roots of Clive Barker while also exploring all those themes of, and of course Nia DaCosta talked a lot about the gentrification of Cabrini Green in Chicago. And how, yeah, there's like a Whole Foods right down the corner from this famous relic of Chicago projects. So I'm not a huge Candyman fan, but I'm super excited for everybody who has deep ties to this movie to see this figure brought back to life.
I mean, I kind of agree with you what you said as far as like, I kind of do also feel bad for the director because it is like, it's very much... Jordan Peele is starting to become like Michael Bay in the sense that whoever directs the movie doesn't really matter. If Michael Bay's name is anywhere on the producer list, everyone says it's a Michael Bay movie. Like it doesn't, it's starting to have that effect. To be fair though, in this case, this feels like if I watch the trailer for Us and I watch the trailer for this, there are so many similarities in like how it's paced, the music, seeing the Destiny's Child song reworked, has very much I Got Five on It vibes, right? It's
I'm actually kind of surprised he's not just directing.
Yeah, like so there are, I can see why someone who's not as in tune with the actual, like, what is going on with this particular movie would get those things. I am excited. I didn't like the first half of the trailer. I love the second half of the trailer. Like, it hooked me by the end that I was in. But the first half, I felt like really dragged. Like, I don't know why. And I like, there's some cool parts, like when the girl's hair gets tossed up just enough to look like someone's messing with it, but you don't see anybody there. Like, that's cool. And I kind of hope they play with that more. But like some of the scenes that are supposed to be like freaky, like the dude, like who's grabbing at the door, but like his whole body's being like, it's being levitated and like he's being pulled. Like that part, some of those parts just like didn't land with me. And I was like, I hope it's not showing its best parts because I hope to see better stuff than that. I expect more in this day and age. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's going to be a sequence of Candyman kills. I wouldn't expect much more.
And yeah.
Like, that's kind of what he does. But
like how they look, like visually.
I mean, it's a good setup because what you're setting up is an interesting discussion for when we get to Invisible Man and how Invisible Man kind of handled this exact same concept of the killer you don't see and all that, and did some smart things that I'm worried this film will not do as well. So it's kind of an interesting parallel, but we'll talk about that when we get to Invisible Man. Any final thoughts on Candyman? Anybody want to look in the camera and say his name five times?
Don't do it.
Yeah, I don't do that.
I think we've hit five already between the four of us.
Oh, yeah. So
It's not in a mirror, and we're not in Chicago.
But so does it have to be in succession, or can it be cumulative? Because that's not cool. It's
new movie will explain.
That's the thing about Candyman. The
best
rules,
part of the trailer is the girl who says that.
They kind of make up the rules as they go. Like
the best part is like the cut to her saying, don't say it.
I thought that was so realistic. Yes.
Yeah, well, it's also great because that's like a total black woman trope in a horror movie who's like, yeah, I'm not doing this. Like, yeah, I'm not even going to attempt this. All right. So that'll do it. Be sure you go on comicbook.com horror and check out the Candyman trailer. Moving right along to the world of Marvel. So one of our esteemed video editors, Nick Floyd, had an interview with an actor slash writer, Adam G. Simon, who is actually in the process of co-writing the Raid Redemption remake that's called, what's it called, Zeno, I think now they've changed the name to, or something like that. Or is that a different film? I forget. Anyway, he's working on the Raid Redemption remake that Joe Carnahan is doing. You know, Smokin' Aces, the A-Team, Joe Carnahan, the Gray. So we got to talk to him, and during that conversation, Nick kind of stumbled on something pretty interesting that we posted on comicbook.com Marvel Today, which was that Adam G. Simon had worked on and pitched a Punisher movie script to Marvel Studios. And this was, obviously, this hasn't been something that's, you know, been put in the pipeline or is getting made or announced. But it went far enough that he did the pitch. Like, he prepared an entire kind of pitch script and concept for the film, and he went to Marvel Studios and he pitched it to them. So if you're wondering kind of what the concept was and why we found it interesting, he kind of talked about how Punisher is a character, like, he evolves his ideas for as things progress. So, like, we're not in the same zone as, like, after Punisher Warzone and all that, like, a while ago. We now have this new Punisher series with John Bernthal. And so what his script did was not throw out all that and, like, try to start over and do a MCU Punisher thing. It basically was picking up as a sequel to the series. So it would be Bernthal, and we would have gone through the deep drama of Frank Castle to just, you know, the end of season two with the fully just, you know, tricking people and murdering them, Punisher, taking out gangs, all of that. And basically, like, what the script would be was, he compared it to 310 to Yuma, the kind of famous Western film with Russell Crowe and Christian Bale, like, one of my favorite Westerns of all time. Yeah, fun fact, I have a thing about Westerns. What? Come at me.
I didn't know that.
I know. I reveal things slowly on this show, so come at me. But, yeah, so, like, Unforgiven, The Man With No Name, Trilogy, all that stuff, shut up. You almost got me with that. The Magnificent Seven.
You were saying it. Okay.
Yeah, both Magnificent Seven versions, like, all that stuff I love. So 310 to Yuma is one of the great ones. James Mangold, before he did Logan and all that, Christian Bale, Russell Crowe, about a kind of farmer that has to get this very famous outlaw, Russell Crowe's the outlaw, Christian Bale's the farmer, to this train in Yuma, and he'll get money that he'll be able to kind of save his farm and his family. And of course, it's not an easy journey.
Doesn't end well.
What's up?
Doesn't end well.
No, it doesn't end well. Well, I mean, it ends well for Logan Lerman, but that's a whole separate story. So what this Marvel Punisher movie would have been after the events of the Punisher series, Endgame and all that, when the world has been through this calamity, that Frank Castle decides that, you know, the biggest villains really taking out street criminals isn't it anymore. It's all this superhero, supervillain crap that's really screwing up the world. And he would want to punish the person in kind of most responsible for this, who he would deem and kind of identify and investigate as Nick Fury, the person who kind of kicked off the Avengers Initiative, did all this stuff. And so basically he would kind of infiltrate and get to Nick Fury, which would set off a whole chain of events in which, you know, the Marvel heroes, the S.H.I.E.L.D. organization, and some villains that would fit into the story would all now be on pursuit of the Punisher, who's trying to pull this kind of 310 to Yuma and keep Nick Fury. Well, Nick Fury is obviously trying to outwit the Punisher and get away. And it would be this kind of movie where eventually they would have to team up, because whatever the villain threat would be would force kind of Castle to work with Nick Fury. There would be appearances from, like, kind of the spy S.H.I.E.L.D.-related Avengers, Falcon, Black Widow, Hawkeye, stuff like that, in pursuit of Frank Castle and all of that, which sounded like a pretty dope Punisher movie if you're going to do one for the MCU. So, like I said, we just wanted to put that out there because, one, we thought it was interesting, and two, that's not something that sounds too bad to happen. You know, if you're going to get Punisher into the MCU somehow, and John Bernthal's Punisher, like, this seems like a good way you could do it.
And Bernthal wants to play that character again.
Oh, I threw that back link in there. Yeah, like, he's still game. Like, Bernthal's not going away.
And setting it like that character, like, that's a perfect re-entry into an entry into the MCU. Like, that is a perfect way to get Nick Fury back into things, because now we've seen, like, at the end of some of the more recent movies, like Nick Fury's influence is again expanding in different ways in the background. And also, I just love that he was like, I want Eminem to do the soundtrack.
Oh, yeah, because Eminem was so mad that the Punisher series got canceled, he would have Eminem do the soundtrack. Like, he had a full plan in place. Yeah, this was a man with a plan.
It worked so well with Venom.
Oh, Venom! Wait, wait, first of all, Eminem on Venom was awesome.
That was terrible.
Venom, news, Venom,
though.
Venom.
I think before you say words like all, like terrible, you need to take Venom and Eminem.
That's terrible.
And compare it to Kendrick Lamar in Amazing Spider-Man 2.
And then take Kendrick that, Lamar and Black Panther.
And then take
and
that.
And then it smashes it.
And then take that and compare it to Wiz Khalifa and Ninja Turtles and Shell Shocked and all that. Hey, like,
that one was bad. That
yeah,
was bad.
So
but Venom, then we go back.
I'm putting it on the level of like Black Panther album.
To Will
like
Smith
compares
those mofos are getting sued. Like
Will Smith yeah. and Wild Wild West taking it back to westerns. Oh, that's a great God. Song. That's Will the best Smith part of the whole
Men,
movie.
Will Smith and Men in Black.
Dude, Wild Wild West. I stand with Eminem and Venom.
You're on your
Venom.
Own.
Venom. No, Venom. 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 Venom.
Right here, this whole thing
knock,
by the way
knock, let
shows
the devil
how
in.
Successful it was
it
because.
Was?
You hate it.
I hate
you
it.
Know the chorus.
No, I know the one. I know the two syllables.
That's all that matters.
All they wanted you to do is walk around in the real world saying Venom. And it worked.
And it worked.
And that's why we got Venom too. Thank you, Connor. All right. So,
I'm sorry for Woody Harrelson's wig.
If you want to, we're in the process right now of reaching out to Adam G. Simon and seeing if we can't get the sample pages from his script that he prepared so we could actually look over them, but that's a work in progress. But if you want to know more, go on comicbook.com, Marvel, check it out, and hit up Comic Book Nation hashtag and let us know what you think of that pitch for that Punisher movie. Patrick, what'd you think? I remember you had some kind of funny things to say about the series. Did you like the series?
I did. I tried to watch the series. There. I couldn't get into it. I love Punisher Warzone, and so I think Punisher, kind of like Hulk, or even in my opinion, like Harley Quinn, it's a character who works better with other characters to play off of as opposed to getting their own entire narrative devoted to them. So really, I kind of tuned out once you guys started singing because I started singing LL Cool J's Deepest Bluest.
Oh, yes! Like a that's a great song!
That's the yes. peak theme song, in my opinion.
Oh,
God. We still haven't touched the best one. Kissed by a Rose by Seal on the Batman Forever soundtrack.
That's not rap.
That's not rap.
He's not with Heidi Klum anymore. No. He's not with Heidi Klum anymore. We're not talking about it. Let's keep moving on. Yeah, I don't even know. You're just a heel out here today. So, moving right along and keeping, we're not going too far with this because it all connects. It all connects. So, Indiana Jones 5 is coming up. And we've all been kind of trepidatious about that because Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, nobody's recovered from that. But there is maybe some hope on the horizon because we got word that Steven Spielberg is not going to be tackling this one and that they're eyeing James Mangold, director of The Wolverine, Logan, 310 to Yuma, Ford vs. Ferrari, the most recent one, as a potential replacement, which, yo, I'm down with that if that happens. I think Mangold's one of the kind of quietly one of the better directors that we've seen in like the last 5 years, and he's done it with some solid hits like The Wolverine, like Logan, like 310 to Yuma, but he's kind of really grown into his own now. You hear him mentioned in like Oscar races more and things like that. So I think he's a great mix of like the kind of people we were talking about. Like when we were talking about, directors who could take over. What were we recently talking about? Who's like a new director?
I know we were talking about Sam Raimi when
we were talking about Sam Raimi
thing happened.
Well, he's a good example. I mean, that's a good parallel. So James Mangold's a guy who knows how to make something distinctly artistic in his own, but like it's still been through the company's studio process and knows how to kind of ride that wave and balance it and balance the art of it with the studio of it and kind of come out the middle. He learned a lot from that last section of Wolverine, y'all.
Like, yeah.
The Silver Samurai, that whole thing. Like, he learned a lot. And if you've never read the actual movie James Mangold was going to make, like, you should go back and read that.
No.
Like, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Really interesting.
Yeah, that whole scene with Wolverine in the village would have been on a lot longer, and it would have been, like, a lot crazier. So, James Mangold's potentially directing Indiana Jones 5. That gives me hope. I don't know about the rest of you.
Absolutely.
Sounds awesome. I love all his movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Patrick?
There's nothing about James Mangold that I think automatically, oh, of course, that makes perfect sense. I don't have anything against him. There's nothing that excites me too much about it. But when it comes to Indiana Jones, you know, sure, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, not very good. But it's still an Indiana Jones movie, so I still like seeing, you know, Indiana Jones gingerly brush someone's shoulder and it sounding like a sledgehammer. So I'm fully on board with any new Indiana Jones, and the fact that George Lucas won't be in it saying, well, this would be great, but what if we have a bunch of CGI aliens? So that's going to be an improvement. And I think what's also interesting is that it's now been long enough from Raiders of the Lost Ark was, you know, unfolding in the 30s, and now taking place, a movie being made in 2019, that would put us at like the mid-70s that Indiana Jones would be in. So that idea, I think, is cool to me, is seeing Mangold tackle this period piece of Indiana Jones, you know, hunting relics and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and we've missed the obvious joke here that the internet immediately went to, which is this going to be the Logan version of Indiana Jones? Is like,
Indy, you still have time.
Yeah, he's like dying of cancer. He's got one last artifact to find to like save some kid or something like that.
But you just sold me.
Yeah.
Like that, I will watch that because I was not very excited for this franchise.
At the very end, he's coming down the hill, but this time the boulder gets him. But right before he does, he throws the artifact away and Mutt catches it and swings on a vine with some monkeys to safety.
With his dying breath, he says, I hate snakes.
Yeah. Yeah.
My whole thing with this is, what is his pitch on, does he look at this project and say, we need really old Indiana Jones? Or does he look at it as, no, we need a new Indian.
Needs Shia.
No, I mean, it's been pretty well established that, like, there is not going to be an Indiana Jones without Harrison Ford at this point. So, like,
that's a mistake, but that's just
me. I mean, that's arguable. I mean, Indiana Jones definitely is ripe for reinvention more so than, like, easier than Bond. Or something like that, and there's plenty of charismatic young men of today that could take over that role. But, I mean, Indiana Jones is also arguably a creation of, like, the serial era that, these kids have no idea what that is. Like, it'd be hard to reintroduce the entire concept of Indiana Jones in a modern setting because it's just one of those things that comes from a world and a time and a place that, like...
Now, if you put Lil in front of it, Lil
Indy.
Oh,
my God.
Lil Indy.
Matt. Sometimes I just want to throw you out of this studio.
With a soundtrack by Post Malone. Oh, yeah. If you make it Lil Indy and Post Malone,
Post Malone's cover of Africa. Yeah.
So that
Lil Indy.
Post Malone does Toto's Africa for Indiana Jones 5. Yeah.
Do
we go to Africa? I'm really interested to see. I mean, but Mangold, to be fair, like Patrick said, I don't think anybody thinks of James Mangold as one of those directors that you hear his name and you're like, yes! They got him. Like, they got him. I was hoping for it. Like, he's just one of those dudes you're like, oh, all right. And you probably have to remind people, like, what his movies
he's
are.
He's sneaky good.
Yeah, he's very sneaky good.
Yeah.
Like, and you have to remind people what his films are. And, like, a lot of his films don't necessarily, like, blow people away. They're just very solid, good stories. He's like a Gavin Hood type director.
He makes great dad movies. Like, Ford vs. Ferrari is a fantastic dad movie.
Yeah, I mean, and now even Logan's a great dad movie literally and figuratively a great dad movie. So I'm looking forward to this, and maybe he'll nail some of this indie stuff with somebody like Mutt or something a lot better than what we saw in Number 4. There's a room for their serious plot and themes about Indiana Jones being this kind of guy about, you know, world cultures and knowledge and history and all the important things that are not so much in vogue anymore, you know? That people don't care about anymore. So the idea of a sexy history professor is like, you know, that's not one of those things we celebrate today. Not a lot of girls drawing over their closed eyelids for that anymore. You know. Dude, you don't remember that in Indiana Jones? That's like one of the things we're teaching a class. We're teaching a class and a girl closes her eyes and there's like a message to him like on it.
That was a deep cut. That was good though.
Yeah, dude, that was like, that disturbed me. That freaked me out. I was like, women are that aggressive? Oh my God. And that started my life as an Invocel. Anyway, so moving right along. From Indiana Jones, we're going to take a break really quick, but when we come back, we're going to take our deep dives of the day. We are going to talk about The Invisible Man, and we are going to talk about WWE Super Showdown. I think we're going to save My Hero Academia till next week. Hopefully we could get maybe Megan Peters in here, Queen of Anime, to talk about it. So stay tuned for Invisible Man Review, WWE Super Showdown Recap when we come back.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
All righty then. So, the Invisible Man remake. We got a new version of Invisible Man from Universal Pictures. And originally, this was going to be part of its Dark Universe franchise. RIP to that. That started with Tom Cruise's The Mummy. And I believe this one was the one that was going to have Johnny Depp as the Invisible Man. Yeah.
Johnny Depp.
Well, now he's happy really being an Invisible Man from the spotlight with all he's got going on right now. So that's good timing. But it might not have been a good look for his persona right now. So that's good. So what we get instead is Lee Whannell, who was instrumental in doing this, working with James Wan to do the Saw and the Insidious franchises, and he broke out on his own and did some of the later Insidious sequels, and he just did, what was that movie last
Upgrade.
Year? Upgrade, yeah.
That was great.
Yeah, Upgrade was Logan Marshall Green, the poor man's Tom Hardy. So basically, so he's had a lot of directorial experience, and what we get in Invisible Man is kind of the culmination of Lee Whannell's all his training that he's been doing. It's kind of like an Insidious movie. It's kind of like Upgrade with some of the kind of science horror stuff that it does. I really enjoyed it. I posted on Twitter. I'm going to let Patrick kind of do the bulk of this kind of review portion, and we're going to do this in two parts. First, we're just going to give our general impressions. Then we'll talk spoilers so everybody can get a little bit of each. And so my non-spoiler feeling is what I really like about this movie is, first of all, Elizabeth Moss is a boss. Like, she can act her pants off. And a lot of this movie works because she is so great about bringing that same kind of Handmaiden's Tale mix of just horrible trauma, but also kind of fierce determination and fire. And her character serves as a very good kind of avatar for what women have gone through for domestic abuse and even just of different kinds, physical, mental, emotional. They kind of touch on all of that here and walking that very difficult line of mixed emotions where, you know, this movie really does kind of do a good job of, without hitting you over the head with it, kind of showcasing the subtlety of the complexity of what abuse does, showing you, and the genius of this film is not being exploitative in the sense of showing you scenes of, like, the female protagonist getting, like, you know, beaten with a belt by the man who's just to say he's abusive. It's more about the subtleties and the lasting trauma of those things that you go through, even when they're over. And it uses that Invisible Man monster as a great metaphor for what I call, like, the specter of domestic abuse, the lingering effects of it kind of given shape in supernatural form. And that's what makes it really intense, this movie. And it is intense from start to finish, from the very first scene to the very last scene. It's kind of just always, you're never really comfortable. You're always on the edge. And you're on edge about just what's going to happen to this woman at any given point. And they really do succeed in making you care. And you're not always worried about, like, her getting killed like in a traditional horror movie. You're worried about her having to go through more abuse of any kind, of just the slightest things, whether it's one of her friends not believing her and, like, kind of pushing away from her, or just her struggling with her own mind and feelings. So I think by kind of making the real world parallels really resonant in this, it did a good job of using this classic monster concept in a very novel and new way. And I think it really works. Now, when you start to think about some of the mechanics of all this and how it plays out and the whole just invisibility thing, it can get a little murky really quick. So as long as you can just accept that there's a dude who can turn himself invisible, you're pretty good. But that was my feeling. Patrick wrote an excellent review that you can read on comicbook.com horror, or just click in the description of this show for the link to that. Patrick, give us a quick rundown about your review. Boil your excellent words down into just a blurb.
Well, you definitely touched upon this, that it so effectively utilizes themes of domestic abuse, yet I never felt like the film had to rely on those as a crutch to like sell the premise, because it's not about the fact that Elizabeth Moss is a woman and she's trying to escape an invisible man. It's about someone wanting to express their torment on any individual for any reason. You know, the roles could absolutely have been reversed and the film would have been just as effective. But the way that Lee Winnell made it this emotionally abusive, physically abusive relationship just heightened the torment, and you were able to see more of those allegories of like a woman trying to find help and saying like, I know no one's going to believe this, but this person is, you know, expressing their authority and trying to exert their power over me, and everyone else being like, we really want to be there for you, but it's hard to believe you because we don't think this person is capable of that. So that really just heightens what at its core is just a good, it plays out like a good haunted house movie, because it is just that feeling of there's someone in here with me and I can't see them and they have a malevolent intention. So it just is so effective that it's hard to believe we've had to wait this long to get this movie, that no one's really like cracked this nut of a successful premise and of a successful formula. And, you know, we have Hollow Man, we have the original Invisible Man. Like,
I don't know what you're talking
about. We've seen the guy becomes invisible and goes crazy and does awful things. We've seen that before. So to just flip that premise and say, okay, but how do the victims feel about, you know, feeling like they're being watched or they're being tormented? Really just makes, not only just as a straightforward horror movie, a very entertaining, very riveting experience, but then also to add those complexities of those various, you know, misogynist microaggressions, just elevate it above just a run-of-the-mill horror movie.
All right, so now we are going to get into full spoilers for Invisible Man. This will be a full spoilers discussion of Invisible Man. If you do not want to hear that, you might want to just go forward about 4 minutes or so until we start talking wrestling. But yeah, we're going to talk full spoilers about Invisible Man. So, in full spoilers breakdown, kind of what I really loved about this movie, and when I thought about it later, is Oliver Jackson Cohen, who played the very troubled, drug-addled brother in Haunting of Hill House, he plays the Invisible Man, who is like this very famous inventor named Adrian, who is, what I love, one of the worst lines in this movie, though, is the throwaway line is, he's a world leader in optics. So that's like our explanation for how he can make an invisisuit. Yeah, whatever that means. Apparently, in this movie, like, it gives you superpowers. You're like Bruce Wayne if you're a world leader in optics. So anyway, but what the movie does is it never actually, I didn't realize this till thinking about it, but it never shows you him doing anything evil with any kind of clear lens. In the beginning, there's like the whole beginning sequence is Elizabeth Moss escaping from his house. He has all these crazy security and alarms. It's a whole intricate escape plan she's been planning for a while that she finally executes one night while he's sleeping. And it's tense as hell because it's like her trying to watch him in bed on a camera on her phone and like get out of this house and do all these things to get out of the house. And even when he finally does appear, like when she's in the car with her sister, it doesn't show him. It just shows this kind of blurred figure run out, smash the window, try to grab her, and they drive off. And then it doesn't show him ever again throughout the movie, like until the very end, except in a picture like that says he committed suicide, which we know is false. So when all the invisible stuff man happens, it's just this invisible specter. And in the third act, you get to see the suit itself when it begins to malfunction a little bit. But you don't ever, even when it shows you the suit, it never really shows you him ever. No, there's no dialogue scenes. I think he says one word to her that becomes the cornerstone of the whole thing, which is he says surprise. Because the movie in the third act takes a big turn. Like, up until then, like Patrick said, it's a very much a haunted house movie with Elizabeth Moff just having to deal with the fact that she knows somebody's there, but she can't prove it. It takes a twist when she goes to meet out her sister who, because he does stuff. He goes into her email, uses her computer. He makes everybody in her life kind of push away from her. And when she finally gets her sister to come back, she goes to a public place, a big restaurant, and says she's trying to tell her sister because she goes to a house. She finds the whole key that makes the third act both good and bad is she goes to a house, finds a second suit, and stashes it away in his house so she could come back and prove it because he tracks her there and chases her out in an invisible suit. So she goes to meet her sister, and she's talking to her sister, and she confesses to her sister that she has this suit. And as she's talking to her sister like looks because there's this knife just hanging in the air, and then it just slices her throat, and then he throws it into her hand in the middle of the restaurant, and so she gets arrested, and her sister gets like brutally murdered right there, and that kind of kicks off the third act where she's like, okay, like F this, I'm gonna kill this dude. And the ending is very murky because essentially what happens is he uses his brother to stage an attack on her best friend and his daughter, Trip from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Aldous, oh, okay, who's great in this movie. And she knows that he made the brother take the fall because the brother was just like a wormy kind of coward that was also dominated by this other brother. And so the killer stages that his brother locked him away in a cell in his house, and he was the victim and all that stuff. And so people are now sympathetic towards him. And so the very last scene in the movie is she goes to meet him for the first time. And for the first time, you see him outside of the suit. And the whole scene is her cop friend is recording this, and she's trying to get him to confess. And this dude, in one of the best scenes I've seen in movies, he won't confess. It's a total gaslighting. She says, please, like, don't make me think I'm crazy. I know you did all this stuff in the suit. I know it wasn't just your brother. And he refuses to break. He refuses to do anything but pretend he's, like, the perfect boyfriend. And the only thing he says to her is, that would be a surprise. And he like emphasizes it because that's the word he said to her, yeah, after he killed her sister. And that's like the only hit. And the guy, Cohen, kind of plays that scene very well. So with the cameras all recording and her friend listening, what she does is get the second suit out, come back in and slit his throat and put the knife in his hand so it looks like he killed himself. And that's the end of the movie. And she gets her friend, the cop, to be like, he killed himself, right? And at the end, the guy's just like, yeah. And she walks off with like the suit and her dog, that which is a hilarious part of the movie, the dog. But it's been very kind of like murky. But what this does is you never get the crutch, like Patrick said, of seeing this guy act like a monster.
Yeah.
It's not about the guy. And that's the brilliant part of the movie. They don't make it. They don't try to do the sympathy. Oh, he was abused. Oh, he was none of that. He's just an ass. He's a monster. He's a sociopath. No talk about mom and dad or the family. None of that.
Yeah.
And you don't ever see it from him directly. So it's not about him. It becomes, like I said, what he does to her and the effect of his abuse is what becomes the quote-unquote real monster of the movie.
Yeah.
And the Invisible Man stuff just becomes this excellent metaphor for that still plaguing her and bothering her. I don't know what message you get out of the end. That's a little bit murkier because you can't just go and slit everybody's throat who's ever hurt you. That's
well, if you have an invisible suit, you can.
Yeah, that's not necessarily the best resolution of the message, but it really does. Like I said, what it does to you is make you scared of the abuse. So it's not about killing her. That's not the threat. Like, the guy's obsessed with her. He doesn't want to kill her. He just wants to ruin her and, like, basically drive her crazy. And that's the thing you're concerned about. This movie, using a horror premise, actually makes you give a crap about domestic abuse in a way that's very rare for us to think of outside of our own personal lives. Like, and I think that's the real kind of payoff that this movie provides. Patrick, how did you feel about the ending to this movie?
Yeah, I think the ending and how people react to it is going to be very telling of the audience themselves, because people who have experienced abuse or are just familiar with that situation, I'm sure they're going to see that act of justice of Elizabeth Moss. Like, yeah, you know, I saw it with, you know, press people, so everyone's reactions were very subdued. But I want to see this opening weekend and see how many people, you know, applaud at that moment, because I'm sure it is going to be this empowering, like, yes, finally she's able to take back her own, you know, independence and stand up for herself. Whereas I'm sure there's going to be other people who are going to understandably say, like, but wait, do we even know how much of that stuff actually happened? And that's not necessarily an incorrect opinion to have, but I think that's what makes the film so successful, is it plants that question in your head of how much are you going to believe what you're seeing versus what's told to you, and do you put your faith in the people telling you they're experiencing this trauma, or do you just look at the cold, hard facts of the situation? So I think that's what's so effective, and also just a reminder of, like, in situations of abuse or trauma of any kind, there's never going to be a black and white solution of good and evil or right and wrong. It's just this big gray area of all of the ways that abuse just sends these shockwaves and ripples through the entire community or social circle or whatever, which is almost reflected in the opening sequence where the title cards come up with these waves crashing on the rocks and reveal, you know, the Invisible Man logo, that it's waves and waves of torment and trauma and abuse that hopefully will be broken by the end of the film.
All right, yeah. And just to add, I mean, there's also the final thing, which I think will be more kind of controversial and interesting talking points of the finale, which is, you know, there is a whole line of theory about people, when you've suffered abuse, the danger of it kind of seeping into you and replicating those types of behaviors, which, you know, you can look at the ending as a justice thing, or there's argument to be made that it is the other way because, I mean, she starts dressing differently. Like, everything is very different, and it's a much darker character who walks out of that house.
As I do want to mention, speaking of seeing, if you are at all interested in seeing this movie, go see it opening weekend with a packed crowd, because it has some of the biggest jump scares.
And well-earned.
But I'm sure by the end of the year, it will go down as, you know, maybe not the best horror film, but just some of the most, like, edge of your seat, huge monster scares that, you know, I'm pretty well accustomed to scares and picking up on those things. And they had a huge impact on me, especially thanks to the sound design of the film. It is ferocious, is how I would describe this film.
It's pretty brutal. And there are some moments that, like you say, jump scares are hard to come by these days and earn, because most people can sense them. But this movie, using the invisible premise, just straight up just catches you off guard in certain moments. Like, yeah. So go check out Invisible Man. I gave it 4 stars in my own little Twitter review. Patrick, what'd you give it?
Yeah, I gave it 4 stars. It's not, you know, I don't think it's going to go down as, like, you know, a best of the decade type of film. There's definitely other films that I've liked this year. But it's just very solid, very engaging, has a lot to say, very effective, lots of good stuff.
All right. So that's Invisible Man. We'll throw it over now to our wrestling experts, Matt and Connor. You guys, WWE Super Showdown, you thought this was going to be a very different event today. You guys had very plans on keeping up with everything that was going to be going on. You were going to film a whole segment for this. And then what did we get?
A tooth. We got a flying tooth.
We don't know if it was a tooth. It might have been.
The flying tooth is WWE's newest star.
I wrote about it, so it's a tooth, dang it. It's a tooth.
Fair enough. Yes. Yes, Kofi. We did have a WWE show today. We had the Super Showdown. And Matt, I think you share my disappointment with this show.
Just overall? Yes, I agree. But I didn't know which part disappointment.
I think you know which part I'm talking about. Okay. I don't really have any other issues with this show. I'm fine with Undertaker beating Styles. Because here's the thing. Styles is basically Teflon. He can just come back on Monday, cut a promo, and they've got a match at me.
So just to give you guys context, the Undertaker came out and
chokeslammed
him. He basically put like a Gavin Hood Warrior, Tom Hardy, on AJ Styles with just one quick chokeslam.
The ref said, someone come down by the count of 10. Undertaker took an hour to get down to the ring. He should have been disqualified. That's so ridiculous.
That's whatever.
And he should have come down in a cart, because the dude did one move. He got paid like $9 million to do one move and then go away. He
tipped
boring.
That's right. Not what frustrated me, and that's not why certain wrestling fans are tuning into this episode right now. I think they're tuning in because they want to know what we thought of that main event.
Still lame. I was...
Who was the main event?
The main event was Goldberg versus Bray Wyatt for the WWE Universal Championship. Goldberg, may I remind you, is 53 years old and is already a WWE Hall of Famer.
Yes.
And his prime ended 15 years ago.
And he still has the best entrance in wrestling. Just putting that out there. That's my little hot take.
Fine.
Still out there. And then he came down and the Fiend... Bray Wyatt is one of the hottest, for those who are not really paying attention to wrestling, he's one of the hottest characters slash gimmicks, whatever, and WWE has protected him very much. They've They've actually done what a lot of people didn't think they would do and put him over. They keep him with the belt. They've done a very good job. So people obviously assumed, well,
to put a metaphor on it, they strapped the Rocket onto him.
Yeah.
He was introduced in a match at SummerSlam last August. The last 4 months before that, he had been hyping up his persona with these really interesting and intricate segments that the more detail you looked at him, the more you could find out about the character. Yeah. And that's never something you had on television.
No.
On WWE television. So the fact that you had it here was like, hey, this guy's actually really putting a lot of effort into this.
Yeah.
And that match with Finn is great. And say what, the Hell in a Cell match was bad, but then they redeemed themselves a month later and just put the title on him. So here we go. Unstoppable force going into WrestleMania. And then he's got to fight a 53-year-old.
Which is fine on its face because I get it. Saudi Arabia is where this event took place. These shows are essentially a giant money grab. So they bring all of their biggest legends and they try and fill it up. It's a twice a year show now?
Twice a year.
So they try and put on a show for that audience because they don't get to see every pay-per-view. Like WWE has how many pay-per-views a year for the States and forever, right? So they get to see this twice a year. So I get why they put Goldberg in a match.
I don't necessarily have the problem. It's the fact that Goldberg beat him in four spears and one very questionable jackhammer.
Oh, that was not a jackhammer.
In 3 minutes.
And that was 3.5 spears.
He beat him in 3 minutes.
Goldberg's new move should be called
you
the
have
lean
been building
because
up,
he leaned into him.
Guy you've been building up for nearly a year, and you beat him in 3 minutes.
It was sad. It was very sad.
And I see people on Twitter saying, oh, you just don't get it. Goldberg's a bigger draw. Here's the thing.
I saw
and
that tweet.
Camera two, close up on me. I want you to hear this. You want to know how you make a star like Bray Wyatt as big as Bill Goldberg? You have him beat Bill Goldberg and other stars just as big as Bill Goldberg. And then fans will say, oh, he's just as big as Bill Goldberg because he beat him.
I just like that we call him Bill now.
I really like it when Connor says Bill Goldberg for some reason. Like, Bill Goldberg, like, it has authority. I dig it.
It's that simple. Because here's the thing. This was the plan. Bray Wyatt, Roman Reigns, WrestleMania 36, next month. Fine.
Yeah.
People can get behind Roman. The dude overcame cancer. There's a fantastic story there, and Bray is a great guy to play off that with. Even if the match isn't great, there's a good story to be told there. What do you have now? You have Goldberg, who, you know, the old school guys love, the old school fans.
If you were growing up
in the 90s, yeah, he was great. He was awesome.
He's awesome.
A staple of the Attitude Era, the Monday Night Wars, without any question.
Well, he's a staple of the WWE. He's a staple of WCW.
Well, he's a staple of the Monday Night Wars.
WCW champion for the longest. Like, that's where
undefeated
a lot
streak,
of people...
His stuff with Hogan. Yeah, it was all great.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. You can't keep going back to the well and relying on old stars like that. You have to actually build people up, or else all these new fans are going to go, who's that old guy that can barely lift up his opponent?
I agree with you.
Here's the thing. If it's Goldberg Roman, who do you cheer for? Who's the bad guy in that equation?
Yeah.
Nobody.
Yeah, I know.
So they're just going to boo Roman again, which is what they don't want.
I agree with you. I am not disagreeing. I did not think they would pull the trigger on this. I thought they would put Fiend over. I know that tweet you're referring to is Bully Ray.
Just have him, low blow or do something where the ref has to call for the bell and then he disappears.
Here's the thing. Bully Ray's tweet is not wrong either. It's not wrong. It's WrestleMania season. This is what WWE does to sell out events and to build up hype. They bring back. Now, I don't get why you can be so nonchalant about Undertaker.
Here's the other thing.
And be so abriled by Goldberg. They're the same.
Undertaker didn't beat AJ Styles for the championship with one chokeslam. And here's the thing I don't understand also, camera two. I'm looking at it. Here's the thing. I hear this argument with certain wrestlers. Bray Wyatt was actually one of them. That this guy doesn't need the world championship. He's big enough on his own. He doesn't need it. Why does that conversation disappear when Goldberg walks in a room? Or with Brock Lesnar, same thing. Why does that conversation suddenly go, oh, no, he needs a championship. Why? He's a Hall of Famer. All you have to do is put him on the card and people get attention. Yeah. It doesn't matter what he's fighting for or who he's fighting. We got excited for Goldberg to fight Dolph Ziggler, even though we knew exactly what was going to happen.
Yeah.
You just wanted to see it.
I think that
says...
You could
do the exact same thing at Mania. If he's fighting Roman for no title, if he's fighting Cena for no title, if he's fighting Baron Corbin for no title.
Well, no, I don't want to see that.
people would want to see Goldberg to squash him.
Yeah. I think that says more about the title than it does the wrestler. The titles have been lagging behind for years.
The man makes the title. And if the man is already made, why does he need it?
I agree with you.
He didn't.
I don't think this helps anything going forward into WrestleMania. I think this makes their biggest star, questionably, arguably, look weak. I think the ending was also crap, where they tried to do a very invisible man-ish disappearance act where he's like there 1 second and he's gone the next. I hated all that. Like,
I'm sad now. I'm going to go teleport away and then pop up and say hi to my friend John tomorrow.
None of it makes sense.
Speaking of Invisible Men.
Why?
Who? John Cena's not in the Invisible Man movie. What the hell?
Yeah, that was a missed opportunity.
That's his figure right there.
That's a missed opportunity.
I will say this, Kofi. Before you wrap up, I know I'm hot in this segment. I know I'm a little bit frustrated. But here's the thing. There is some positivity this weekend. Do you know why?
Yes.
Because we got AEW Revolution on Saturday. This pay-per-view is amazing. It's only 7 matches, and I love it.
Connor's favorite.
I'm really excited. They had a show last night in Kansas City, my hometown, and it was awesome. You had a 30-minute Iron Man match with Kenny Omega and Pac, and it was fantastic.
Do you want to call on camera too?
Camera two, look at me. Look at my eyes when I tell you need to watch AEW Revolution on Saturday.
Also, go read my post about the tooth.
The thing I'm more concerned about in all this is like what's going to happen to Goldberg's acting career, like. This is going to set it back a ways.
Well, Santa Slays 2 has been delayed. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and The Flash needs,
though,
Slayer. We need that back.
We could always get a Nash Bridges redo.
And that's a good place. That's a good, random, useless place.
Don Johnson, man.
Like I said, good, random, useless place to end this episode of Comic Book Nation. If you are just now getting into the show, and after that ending, I hope you stick with it. We put up new episodes every Wednesday and every Friday on comicbook.com, where you can subscribe to our RSS feed, or you can subscribe on your favorite podcast platforms. We're on iTunes. We're on Spotify. We're on Stitcher. We're on iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and Google Playlists. Or if you want to watch video of the show, you can always go on comicbook.com's YouTube page and check it out there. Or if you want to talk with us or just leave an opinion about anything we talked about on the show, please go to the hashtag comicbooknation and do so. Or you can find me at Kofi Outlaw.
At ConnorCasey_CB.
And you can find me at Matt Aguilar, CB.
And you can see Patrick's handle right over there over his window. It's at the Wolfman. So you can find him there. Now, camera three, look at me. Look at me. If you enjoy the show, go on iTunes and leave us a 5-star review, because we are coming up next week, I think, on our next show. We are going to read some reviews on the air. And if we read your 5-star review from iTunes on the show, we will send you a free Comic Book Nation t-shirt just like this one. Camera three, get this. Get this, camera three.
And 5 free sweaters.
Again?
Stop. No. Matt,
you promised
Matt is going to really tie
you
us up as CBS
last
Legal.
Time I was on.
And a toboggan. CBS Legal does not support anything Matthew Aguilar is saying. We send you one shirt.
A toboggan.
That's the agreement Viacom CBS has made. So, if you like the show, leave a review. You get a shirt. I don't know about the rest. That'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. Thank you for tuning in. As always, we'll see you guys next time. Peace.
Later.